right, welcome back. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm Henrik, and this is Red Ice Radio, an alternative independent radio program that counters and questions misleaders and the ill wisdom of the day and almost everything that shapes our current times of backwardness. Almost everything is upside down, and if you have your head screwed on straight, well, then you can't help to question almost everything that we've been told. That's what we do on this program. We question history, we question education and academia, and accordingly, we end up talking with a lot of controversial guests and also researchers and authors that go against the grain. We do this in an effort to counter the propaganda out there, the conditioning, but also to challenge what you believe and what you've been taught. And you might not agree with all our guests, and neither do we, but we do try to find people who have a different view on things, and we hope that you will find our programs interesting, engaging, and of course, challenging as well. You know, in these times of threatened freedom of speech, it's, well, almost our duty to let censored voices be heard. Since we talk with so many different people from different backgrounds, some of what you'll hear on this program is going to be contradictory. And that's just how it is. When you want to find the truth, you need to look at things from different angles. Our website is redicecreations.com. That's where you can find a whole lot more of what we do. Today, our guest is John DeNugent. He was born in Rhode Island and a descendant of the first British settlers of America in 1635. And he traces his heritage back to the Norse of Normandy before that. He's a graduate of Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. John served in the United States Marine Corps and the Virginia Army National Guard. John has been an open activist for white civil rights since 1978. And today our topic is going to be on the Solutrians, the ancient white Ice Age European tribe that now many anthropologists believe were the first true Americans settling around 20,000 B.C. We are going to talk about the archaeological finds that supports this thesis, and we'll also get John's somewhat unique take on what happened to the Solutrians and how they were targeted by the Amerindians 10 millennia later. This also seems to have coincided with a global environmental catastrophe, which may have involved a comet striking eastern North America as well. You might not agree with John DeNugent's stance or interpretation, but he has done some very interesting research on the Solutrians and has gone to the source material for the archaeological finds in an area that has been effectively covered up. And we'll try to lift that lid today and look at what's underneath. Welcome, John. Thanks for coming on with us today. It's good to have you here. Hope you're doing well today.
Thank you for having me on your show, Henrik, over there in Sweden. We have a lot of Scandinavians where I am now, and I'm certainly glad to collaborate with you as part of the overall principle of white unity, especially at these times of peril that we're undergoing now.
Well, very good. I mean, I've been interested in the Solutrians here in the last year or so. I actually remember many years ago I watched one of the documentaries about the subject on, you know, Ice Age Columbus and whatnot. But I did try to get a hold of Dennis Stanford and his co-author Bruce Bradley, the latter of the University of Exeter in England there, who've done a lot of work, archaeological work, on the topic of both the Clovis culture and also the Solutrians. But to no avail, at least yet, I managed to get a hold of these guys. But a lot of the other hits that I got while searching around actually pointed back to your website, John, and the research that you've done in this department. And of course, there's a lot of material here. There's a lot of material that you base off of these guys and some others as well that have done work on this. So it's a very interesting topic to get into. You know, who were the first American, really? How did they get there? And get deeper into what is known as the Solutrian hypothesis. But before we get into detail about the findings and whatnot, when did you come across this work first, John, and what sparked your interest in this?
Well, a comrade named Stan Hess out in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, first told me about it, and I didn't quite see what its relevance was to white survival today, because after all, we're talking about things 20,000 years ago of ancient history and, you know, Stone Age people with, you know, Stone Age spears and whatnot. Well, there was a time when white people threw spears too, and when white people did not even have metal, but they worked in the Stone Age. Maybe it bores some people to think of whites as not flying in spaceships or, you know, the Third Reich or water stuff. But, you know, white people lived in caves. White people were Eskimos from 30,000 to 10,000 BC. White people wore furs. White people hunted seals and whales and fish. And white people had Stone Age weapons. The relevance of all this, it began to dawn on me, because Stan Hess said this is extremely important. First of all, we see how the white race, again and again and again, is overly noble, overly sharing, overly friendly, not suspicious enough of strangers, and we let other people come into our country, and then they rise up and genocide us. This is the story of the Salutrians, and we need to learn this lesson again for our time. I know you're over in Sweden, Henrik, and it's horrific, the stories of the gang rapes of your beautiful Swedish women, the violence. It's also happening in England, America, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, everywhere. And we have these tendencies towards nobility, and let's just share the wealth with everybody, and let's welcome everybody in a friendly spirit. Well, that's fine. The first non-whites who come in are friendly. And then later on, the psychopaths in their own race, their demagogues, rise up and say, let's just slit the whites' throats and take their stuff. And this is what happened to the Salutrians. So it's very relevant to right now. Now, specifically, this is relevant for Americans, because the Mexicans who were pouring into the United States, and I believe, along with Virginia Abernathy, who was the world's number one expert on population studies, she wrote for a major scientific journal. She edited a major scientific journal for 10 years on population studies for the Springer Publishing Empire in Germany, which they have 1,000 scientific journals. She says there are 70 million Mexicans in the United States. Now, the Mexicans are not, you know, pure white Spanish blood. They are mixed with American Indians. And they believe they have the right to take all of the United States and Canada, quote, back, unquote.
Right.
Because, yeah. Because this continent belongs to the red man. And when white people say, you're an illegal alien, go back to Mexico, they say, no, gringo, you go back to Europe because we descend from the red man. The red man is the original native of North America. So you go back to Europe, gringo. So the question is, who was here first? It's extremely relevant. The Salutrian hypothesis says white people were the first humans in North America in our era. They came here 20,000 BC, and the red man came 10,000 years afterwards and then began seeking to genocide the white people who were the Native Americans. They were saying white people are Native Americans, and the Indians came and genocided us. So the guilt, you know, the Germans, young Germans, Henrik, are taught to feel rotten, to feel ashamed. Because
you know,
Hitler was so evil, tried to conquer the world, and abolish democracy, concentration camps, Gestapo, you know, goose-stepping. And he genocided 6 million innocent Jews. Okay, so the guilt trip we Americans get are, first of all, we didn't stop Hitler in time. Franklin Roosevelt wanted to get us into the war, stop the madman Hitler, but we waited until we were attacked by the Japanese at Pearl Harbor in Hawaii, and only then, when forced to, did we join the war and wake up to our duty. So we Americans should feel rotten also about the Jews, supposedly 6 million Jews dying in the supposed Jewish Holocaust. But the main guilt trip for us as white Americans is, you people drove the Indians off their land. And so, you know, when you look at the 50 states of the United States, so many of them are Indian place names. Massachusetts, Connecticut, Iowa, Kentucky, Oregon, you know, Wyoming, Texas, Alabama, Mississippi,
mm-hmm. yep.
and so forth, Tennessee. These are all Indian names. And so when you see that, and then you get hit with a guilt trip, it says, my God, we are living on the Indians' land. And for me, I grew up in sort of a somewhat liberal family in New England, and we're proud of our ancestry and our family, but I always felt, you know, we're living on stolen land. This belonged to the Indians, and we, brutal white people, drove them off the land. We put them on reservations, and they have no jobs. They just drink whiskey and do drugs, and they die in misery, in poverty, because we, the evil white race, you know, and the white race also, of course, we oppressed blacks, we oppressed homosexuals, we oppressed women, and on and on.
Right.
So
yeah.
People with blonde hair and blue eyes are just hyper evil.
Evil incarnate. Yeah, we can kind of see these in some of these movies today. And I think it's true that there are wickedness and evil in any race on this earth. But for some reason, it's been kind of pre-approved and stamped to put the majority of the blame these days on white people, you know, and this has been my concern as well, because it's of great worry if a lot of these accusations are indeed built on falsehood. And I've noticed that there are a lot of things when it comes to archaeology, historical cover-ups, etc., that seems to suggest that there is more to this particular story of the history of the American continent, but it's been very hushed up and cover up. I mean, a clear example that I like to bring up is, of course, the journeys of Leif Erikson, you know, over from Greenland over to America many, many hundreds of years before even Columbus, a potential converso, made it over here, you know, or over to the American continent. But what can you say about the if we back up a little bit and talk about how the solutions ended up here? And there's a lot of intricacies in the story and a lot of I want to talk a little bit more about the proof and the archaeological record, what you know, suggests that this is the case, etc. But what is the main theory when it comes to how the Salutrians came to America in the first place, and what is some of the reasoning behind that, John?
Well, okay, again, thank you very much. That was a great question and a great setup for where I'd like to go with this discussion. First of all, let me emphasize that the scientific establishment has proven the Salutrian hypothesis. It's now a fact. The problem is that when the so-called white nationalists latched onto it and understood the racial implications for modern politics and you know, modern immigration policies and how white people should see themselves, then the enemies of the white race began saying, oh, it's just a crazy theory. But wait a minute. Way back in 1998, the very prestigious Channel 4 in England did a show called Homicide in Kennewick. It was about the discovery of a white skeleton in Kennewick in Washington State. That's on the west coast of the United States from 7,000 BC, 9,000 years ago. And this white man with a very white skeleton and a white skull, and you can tell by the shape of the skull, the race, you know, the wide cheekbones, Asian, Mongoloid, and so forth, and then, you know, African, you know, the bones. You can tell whether it's a man or a woman. You can tell what race it is just by the skull, just by the skeleton. He's clearly a white man. He had been shot, actually, in the buttocks and died from an infection 3 weeks later from an Indian arrow, which he was shot, I guess, while running away from Indians. He was murdered. He was killed 9,000 years ago. He's on the west coast of the United States. That's not the east coast of the United States, closer to Europe. It means that white people had landed on the east coast of America, crossed all the way through the Midwest, through the Rocky Mountains and the Great Plains, and ended up, you know, California, Oregon, Washington State, where he was killed. And he had many broken bones. He may have been in a lot of warfare with Indians before. It's an ominous thing, because here was a white man killed by Indians, running apparently from Indians, because he was shot in the buttocks, as we say, and died from an infection 3 weeks later. You can tell because the bone was corroded by infection. His hip bones. But this is from the very prestigious Channel 4 in England, and this Channel 4 is like public television in the United States. It is they bring symphony music and science shows and documentaries and, you know, high-level historical material. So it's very prestigious that they ran this, Homicide in Henry. In 2003, and by the way, the Discovery Channel, which is a worldwide cable television channel then picked up this show and showed it in the United States. Then in 2003, 5 years later, Channel 4 was back at it, this time with a major production called Ice Age Columbus. And this really laid out in a wonderful way. It's on YouTube. You can see it right now. Ice Age Columbus, saying that, you know, Columbus meaning like white people, not the Italian Columbus, but a Columbus of white people back in the Ice Age. Ice Age Columbus. And it was a sort of a docudrama because they interviewed scientists and showed scientific evidence, but they would keep switching back to a fictional story of a white clan from what is now the south of France. But when you think of France, you don't think of today. We think of dark-haired men with beanies and chatting with women and drinking aperitifs and whatnot. No, no, we're talking about a France in the Ice Age of reindeer and snow and woolly mammoths.
It's kind of like, not woolly mammoths, but the further up north you go in Scandinavia, of course, more likely you had that type of environment there. And they moved with the ice sheet, right? That's pretty much speculated that I can't recall off of the top of my head how far down the ice sheet actually pushed. But these tribes, they were moving along, hunting along the ice sheet, correct?
Right. Basically, all of the British Isles, Ireland, Scotland, England, Wales, the northern tip of France, Holland, Belgium, all of northern Germany and Poland, the Baltic countries, Iceland, Norway, Sweden, Denmark, and Finland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, all that was under 2 miles of ice. But south of that were massive snowfields where for 8 months of the year, snow fell. The problem was there was a great crisis. The Ice Age lasted from 30,000 BC to 10,000 BC, so a 20,000-year period. The white race evolved and developed, became a hardy, intelligent, resourceful, innovative race during this horrible period where you had to work hard, you had to cooperate, you had to invent new technologies, particularly during what was called around 20,000 BC in the middle of the Ice Age, the glacial maximum. That's when the temperatures hit rock bottom. It was the coldest period of the Ice Age. And what happened was that there was so much snow that the animals whom our ancestors hunted, the woolly mammoths, the reindeer, and wild horses, they apparently didn't ride horses. They hunted them for meat at that time. They were dying out themselves because they could not paw through the thick, thick snow to get down to the grass to eat it. So the animals we hunted were dying, so the white race was also dying. At this point, the Solutrians, and the Solutre is a very interesting little village in eastern central France, but again, this is snow-covered France. This is like northern Sweden now, or above the Arctic Circle in northern Finland, northern Finnmark and Norway and so forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Snow most of the year, gray, overcast, windy. So the white people were starving and dying because the animals they hunted were disappearing. So at that point, this docudrama shows an actual clan of white Solutrians. To be politically correct, they don't show any of them as having blonde hair or blue eyes. They all have dark hair and basically brown eyes, except one girl, the daughter of the clan chieftain, they let her have sort of blue-gray eyes. But everybody else looks, sort of like a Frenchie, actually, or, an Italian or something. Because God forbid they show these Solutrians who were so brave and resourceful. It's being Nordic.
Has there been any determination in terms of genetic markers or whatnot in terms of eye color and hair color on the finds? Do you know?
No, there have been no determinations. They are just now, apparently, succeeding in extracting usable DNA from prehistoric people, 20, 30,000 years ago. Apparently, the quality of the DNA does break down over thousands of years.
Yeah.
There is some evidence that the blonde hair suddenly erupted in the Baltic area near Scandinavia about 8 or 9,000 BC. That's mysterious. Why? How did it happen? It's possible that white people at that time had dark hair and often blue eyes.
Right, I've heard that too, yeah.
Or dark hair and maybe green eyes. We certainly see that among the Irish, you know, very famous actor and producer, Mel Gibson, very politically incorrect also. He's classic Irish look, dark hair, and very blue eyes. The most evil man who ever lived, Adolf Hitler, had dark hair and blue eyes, as did his mother and father, dark hair, blue eyes. So it's possible, and I don't know this, that white people at that time had dark hair and blue eyes, and that the blonde hair came later, which, of course, would suggest that we might want to talk at some point about the possibilities how blonde hair suddenly appeared in Europe, and the possible extraterrestrial theory that an extraterrestrial race, the Pleiadians or the Aldebarans, that various races of so-called aliens have visited the Earth and left behind their genes at certain times, because it seems like suddenly, bam, blonde hair was there around 8 or 9,000 BC. And the blonde-haired people began conquering Europe, began conquering the brown-haired people. So there were two different kinds of white people, blonde white people and brown-haired white people. And the blonde people seem to have conquered them. The brown-haired people, they're taller, smarter. Who knows? In any case, we don't really know what the Seleucids look like. We know that they were white because they were from Europe. Their skeletons are clearly white. They were extremely innovative in many ways. They did beautiful cave paintings. The beautiful cave paintings of France that we have seen, you know, with the hunting of bison, and there were mountain lions and all kinds of, and wild horses, these beautiful caves in France. This was the Seleucians. At first we thought it was a later civilization, but now many experts believe it was the Seleucians. So suddenly art, beautiful art, is appearing with the Seleucians. Unlike the Neanderthals, who in many ways looked Semitic, they had curved noses, they were short, squat, short necks, dark hair, round faces, very powerful, sort of built like a fire hydrant in their body shape, not long, narrow faces, not tall. They were sort of short, squat people. In their hunting, they would like throw a rock at an animal, or if they found a sharp rock, they would then take a stick, split the stick, and jam the sharp rock into the end of the stick at the split end, and then tie some animal sinews around the split end to bind in the rock at the end of the stick. And they'd throw the stick, which was, you know, a spear at that point. Yep. But they didn't know how to for example, a rock called flint, and over a 20-minute process, which the Seleucians invented, to chip off gradually little flakes. In the end, what the Seleucians created was a leaf-shaped spearhead that was as sharp as a modern razor blade. So this is a huge invention, the flint spearhead or arrowhead, by the Seleucians. So the Seleucians were facing starvation. They had to become more effective hunters. And this could go deep into the body of a woolly mammoth, which is an 8 or 9,000 pound, you know, a 3 or 4,000 kilogram animal, wild and dangerous animal. And the documentary, Ice Age Columbus, shows the conflict between humans and woolly mammoths, who did not enjoy being killed and eaten by humans.
Right.
And objected strongly, and their body language shows it. they were quite eager to stomp to death the humans who were trying to kill them so they could eat them, which, of course, I understand the wild mammoth's point of view. But eventually things got so bad that even the more advanced hunting weapons could not enable the white race to survive, because the animals were dying, because there was so much snow and so much winter they just couldn't get down to the grass underneath all that snow. So the Solutrians took to the ocean. Now, and they headed west towards North America. But it's not as impossible as it sounds. In the Ice Age Columbus documentary by the prestigious Channel 4 in England, carried by the Discovery Channel, you can see the whole thing on YouTube now.
I recommend, by the way, just mention that. I definitely recommend people checking that out if you haven't seen it already. It's very interesting. I think also, I'm just looking around here, I think that even Homicide in Kenwick Man is actually up there available as well. I haven't been able to play it here yet, but it's there. It's a 50-minute long, you know, a documentary from Equinox. I think that is the one, actually, with Channel 4. Yeah, that's right. So that's available for both of those two for people who want to check that out. So we'll add those links on the program page here. But please go ahead, John.
Yeah. Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to hear that according to you, the Homicide Kennewick is again available. Backing up, the great advantage of Homicide Kennewick is it shows the American Indians and their terror and their fear of the truth. And they wanted immediately for the federal government to destroy the entire archaeological location where the skeleton of this white Kennewick man was found. And they wanted the bones to be given to them for burial. They said, no, this is an Indian skeleton. Under federal law, you must give us the skeleton. And the scientist, James Chatters, fought a heroic battle, and scientists from the Smithsonian, such as Dennis Bradford, went on to write his own book called Across Atlantic Ice and about the Solutrians. He fought, and many of the others joined, says, we cannot destroy the skeleton. We cannot give the skeleton to the Indians. The skeleton looks like a white man, so the Indians should not get this skeleton. This man is not related to the Indians. It's not a skeleton of one of their people. But the Indians were terrified. In fact, James Chatters' wife was an American Indian, and she divorced him.
Oh, really?
Because the Indians grasped what this meant.
Was it under the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, right, that this was done, I believe? And there was a lot of scientists who started a lawsuit against this, right, for the right to do investigations on the find, correct?
Right, exactly. I mean, the Indians understood this. The whole mythos of the poor Indians driven off their land and genocided, massacred by the evil white man was being threatened by the truth. The truth was the Indians killed the white people. And here's a perfect example of a white man, and he had broken ribs, and he had all kinds of fractures. So he'd been in a lot of conflict, possibly with Indians. Maybe he got a few hunting wild animals, but you know, I mean, we know he was killed by Indians, and maybe they narrowly killed him on several occasions before they finally shot the fatal arrow into his buttocks, and he died. I guess he was able to escape from them, but he still died of the infection 3 weeks later. So here's an example of Indians killing white people, and of a white man being in Washington State in 7,000 B.C. So the Indians wanted to get that skeleton and bury it, destroy it. Because, see, the Indians basically have nothing except casinos and white guilt. They don't have jobs. Unfortunately, a lot of them are alcoholics. A lot of them have diabetes. Many of them are obese, or they do other kinds of drugs. And they have nothing except casinos where white people come and gamble, and they live off the casinos. And why do they have casinos, whereas other people don't have casinos, tax-free casinos, tax-free income? Because the white man feels guilty toward the Indian, because we threw them off their land. We took away North America from them, and we were evil. So out of guilt that we took their land, we let them have casinos, and they live off gambling money. You know, they're going nowhere with their lives. They're miserable people, miserable, unhappy people, and extremely poor. So if the Indians lost the white guilt trip, and it turned out the white people were here first, the Indians massacred them, then they're afraid they would lose their casinos, they lose the favorable treatment, and white people say, oh, well, the wonderful Indian culture. Anyway, so the first movie was 1998, Homicide in Kennewick, the white skeleton found on the west coast of the United States, men obviously killed by Indians. Then came 2003, Ice Age Columbus, And then the white nationalists begin to really grasp the importance and the relevance to today of this issue, because this involves, at the end of the Ice Age, basically, Mongols were able to come. There was a land bridge between Siberia and Alaska. They crossed over into North America. Some maybe came down along the Pacific coast, British Columbia, Washington State, Oregon, California. Maybe some of them entered what is now the United States by boat along the Pacific coast. Others may have come in east of the Canadian Rockies, through Alaska, down to the east of the Canadian Rockies into what is now the United States. Because apparently that area east of the Canadian Rockies, the ice melted first and it became dry land and the Indians came down there. Then they flooded into this North America, and at this point it's mysterious what happened next, because white people can be great warriors. You can't say, well, one Indian against one white man, the Indian's going to win. Nobody had guns. Nobody had firearms. Nobody had machine guns. Nobody had shotguns or rifles or pistols back then. So it was basically the Indians with their spears or their swords or their knives or possibly shields, maybe some body armor, versus white people who had similar technology. In cases like that, I know because my father fought the Japanese in World War II. He fought the Chinese and North Koreans in the Korean War. White American Marines and Army fought the Vietnamese in the Vietnamese War, the Vietnam War. White people are not inferior, man-to-man, to Asians. But somehow the Asians end up having the whole thing. We just don't know what happened around 10,000 BC. But there's a very powerful theory that says that a comet hit North America around that time. We do know that all over North America, and if you can see this on the layers of dirt on a riverbank, there's suddenly around 10,000 BC, there's a layer of charcoal, just black charcoal, just like burned wood and burned plants. So apparently some tremendous catastrophe hit North America around that time. It's around the time, supposedly, also destruction of Atlantis, according to the ancient Egyptians, who passed on this story to Solon, the great Athenian, ancient Greek. And then you have the story of the biblical flood. You know, what happened at this time? Did a comet hit the Earth? Did it hit North America? Did it cause flames to burn up most of North America? Did the white people die from the shock? Did the white people die from a hurricane? Did white people die from all the plant life dying and the animals dying from tremendous forest fires? Did the number of white people drop by 90%? Did the comet hit the ocean and a giant tidal wave sink Atlantis? We know the story in the Bible of Noah and the Ark, which is, by the way, is a very good movie with Russell Crowe called Noah. It came out recently. People say, well, it's a Jewish story. No. This is a story long before the Jews. Many peoples, the Tibetans, the Hopi Indians, many peoples have a story that there was a great flood. Well,
yeah,
did a comet...
Definitely a shared mythology there, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a Jewish story. It's a story that the Jews recycled in their book, the Old Testament. But did the comet hit the ocean and causing... We just don't know. Did, you know, a tremendous wave hit and inundated Atlantis? They say in one night it was gone. They say the civilization became evil and God wanted to wipe it out. So we just don't know. We're just speculating. But it's very clear that there was a catastrophe around 10,000 BC.
Yeah.
My belief is that what happened is that there were so few white people left that when the Mongols came in from Siberia into Alaska, through Canada, and into what is now the United States, and all of Canada stayed under the ice for a very long time. The 48 American states were less affected by the Ice Age. The northern third of the United States was under the ice, but the southern two-thirds of the United States was like it is today, except it was cooler, about 10, 12 degrees cooler than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible that when these Mongols came, very few white people survived.
Is there any any idea about the numbers we're talking about here? How many made it over? And of course, these are very, very long periods. If it's true that the Seleucians came over about 20,000 years ago, or 20,000 BC, and then we have another incursion of another people at 10,000 BC, we're talking about 10,000 years difference. A lot of things can happen during that time. Of course, it might be a tremendous growth in population. It might be diminishing due to other circumstances such as climate changes and things like that. But is there any suggestion, as far as you know, in records about how many, what numbers we're talking about here?
Well, I think it was, relatively significant numbers. Let me just go back, Henrik, if I may, into how they got here. There was an ice bridge for probably 6 to 7 months of the year, the colder part of the ice age. And there was just a solid block of ice from what is now France over to New England or Long Island Sound near New York City. And so what you could do, and the American Eskimos and the Canadian Eskimos, the Inuit people, did this up until just 100 years ago. You would spearfish during the day with leather boats made from skins of animals. You put in oil from the animal's blubber, you melt it, and so the leather was treated. It was waterproof. And you had sticks or bones and stuff as the ribs of the boat. And at night, you'd pull your boats out of the water onto the ice. You'd put down furs, and then you'd flip the two boats together, facing inward. You put more furs over the top. You take some whale blubber or seal blubber or fish oil, and then you would light that, and you would have a little fire inside. This is like a shelter, and with all the furs and with the everything. Plus, people were tough back then. They could handle the cold. I mean, the white race, white people were Eskimos. It's a very important thing to remember. White people were Eskimos for 20,000 years, lived in a world of snow and ice. And then they survived. And then the next morning you got up, you put your boats back in the water, put the furs back in the boat, and then you went spearfishing and you continued. The theory is that there was Atlantic currents going westward, so it pulled the boats toward North America. And in the Ice Age Columbus documentary, they explain all this. Now, here's an important thing to remember. And Dennis Stanford has said, if we just had a couple of million dollars, we could investigate all this. The Ice Age meant that a tremendous percentage of the water in the oceans of the world was sucked up into the ice in the northern and southern hemispheres. Like the North Pole was like much bigger. The ice cap was much bigger.
The polar caps, yeah.
Yeah, the southern polar cap was much bigger. And a lot of the ocean water through snow and ice and water ended up on the ice caps. So the oceans were much lower, 200 feet lower in some cases. So what this meant is, for example, back then, you could walk from France to England. The English Channel was solid ground. There was the Dogger Land.
That's right, out of... North England, Denmark, and that whole area, Friesland in Holland and whatnot, there's still actually very large sandbanks to this day in this area. And I remember a story coming out a few months ago, maybe 6 months ago, actually detailing that this place was actually a tremendous boom in civilization, and that this at some point actually had been a kind of a center of European peoples, actually. Very interesting, that piece of land right there.
Exactly. So it was dry land between England and Norway and Denmark. You could just walk. It was just dry earth. And there were villages and cities and all sorts of things. So the same is true of the east coast of North America. Florida was twice as wide and fat as it is now. The east coast of the United States went out, they say, about 200 miles further east than it is now. And so the theory is, since humans tend to congregate on the coastline, and I'm sure probably, for example, in Sweden, where you're from, Henrik, probably 70% of the people of Sweden live within 100 miles of the coast. People like living
sure.
on the coast.
Yeah, yeah.
The rivers and whatnot, it's not as cold. You don't have the extremes of heat and cold on the coast that you do in the interior of a country. People like going to the beach, and you could, there's fishing, and it's kind of just trade. Whereas if you're further inland, it's more trouble in other ways. The theory is that the Salutrians congregated on the then east coast of the United States, but it's now underwater because when the Ice Age ended, the ocean levels rose as the ice caps in the north and the south melted. All that water went back into the oceans. The ocean levels rose. So Dennis Stanford, who is the professor, the chairman of the Department of Anthropology at the famous Smithsonian Institution in Washington, D.C., who co-authored the wonderful 2012 book Across Atlantic Ice about the Salutrians, he says, if I had a couple of million dollars, I'd go out with submarines and scuba divers, and we would look for buried villages.
Yes.
We would look for villages 200 miles out into the Atlantic Ocean, and we might find a lot of stuff. We have actually found stuff off in the Chesapeake Bay, off the coast of Maryland and Virginia, evidence of villages of the Salutrians. It's now deep underwater. Hmm. So it could be that hundreds of thousands, maybe even a million, white Salutrians lived along the East Coast, but we know that some of them also went further inland. After all, you know, the land of North America is wonderful for farming and hunting. We have areas like Ohio, the topsoil is big, delicious black topsoil, you know, with worms and oxygen in the soil, wonderful for farming. You know, sometimes this is 8 feet thick. So white people were spreading out. That's how Kennewick Man ended up in Washington State. He had crossed 3,000 miles of North America. He or his ancestors. And then the comet apparently hit. The Ice Age ended. The Mongols came in and began killing those white people who had survived. And most of their villages are underwater at this point.
Hmm. Yeah, very interesting. It's amazing Moore hasn't done on this particular theory, and that Moore support hasn't, you know, arisen for Dennis Stanford's work there. You'd figure that would be more people would be interested in this now. But I mean, they do make finds to a certain extent all the time. It just seems to be that the follow-up discoveries are very kind of sparse and far in between, because I remember there was another story about just to the north of the most southern tip of Sweden. I'm kind of scrambling here to find the story as we speak, but that talked also about a, you know, another society, civilization found off the coast of the, it's under the water right now, just southern tip in Scandinavia. I've seen no follow-up. I've seen no archaeological, work suggested or started or being done. So there's a lot of these hints that are released, and they suggest here's finds, there might be something here, but not much work is consequently done on that. It's a shame, isn't it, John?
Well, it is, but I mean the motive is obvious. They don't want any white pride. They want to see all civilizations started, you know, in Iraq, in the Semitic areas of the world. The white people were just barbarians living in snow caves, and they had no civilization. They were nobodies, and basically the Jews and the Egyptians, they gave us their civilization. And, you know, the black-haired, brown-skinned peoples gave the world the civilizations, and the white man just borrowed from those people in the Middle East. That's what they want us to believe, that the Nordic white Aryan people had no civilizations. So anything which would create more white pride or realization that white Nordic people had wonderful civilizations, they don't want us to know about that.
So there's an incentive for the cover-up here, basically.
Right, right. So in other words, if you want Sweden to be overrun with Kurds and Turks and Arabs and Africans, black Africans, and you want them to rape the white Swedish girls, you have to break the pride of the white Swedish man and say you have nothing to be proud of. These brown and black-skinned peoples are angry at your evil racism and how the white race has oppressed other people and been a curse on the planet. So this is payback. This is bad. This is the karma of the white race for all its evil. And then the white man will stand aside and do nothing while his women and children are raped. So it's all part of a giant evil psyop, psychological operation to genocide white people. Now, I can tell you that there's lots of evidence for the Salutrian hypothesis that is from much later on. We know that the white Salutrians were not entirely genocided. A good example of this is the Wendover Bog people in Florida. For 30 years ago, Florida has a huge population, big economy. They're always digging and building new houses. Well, a bulldozer was digging in some swampy pond, and they came across almost 180 skeletons of white people in the bog, and very advanced culture, textiles, weapons, clearly white people. Some of the skeletons were taken away to a museum, and the museum director ordered no DNA testing whatsoever was to be permitted on these skeletons. Well, finally, somebody was able to get some samples, and he found that they were Europeans. They were white people, the Wendover Bog people. Now, these people were about 7,000 years ago, about 5,000 BC, white people in east, south, central Florida, near Cape Canaveral, where the Americans, the NASA rockets, the Apollo moon program, Cape Kennedy, all that area of the east coast of Florida. So white people were there 7,000 years ago. So the white people were not all wiped out. Now we have another very important thing, and I have a major essay on my website, johnnugent.com, but of course the enemy has hacked my website. As we speak now, on the 18th of September 2014, my website has been down now for 2 weeks, and I need money to put my website back up and restore it. The enemy seems to fear me as a potential leader, and they seem to fear my information because it causes white people to feel pride. You know, it's not to hate other races, but to feel pride, love for our own people. That's all.
Right.
And they hate our people and want to genocide us. And they particularly don't want white men to remember their power and their masculinity and our warlike genius of the white race. The white race is very good at war. If we're forced into war, we're very good at defending ourselves. So they want us to be emasculated. They want us to be feminized and lose the warrior spirit.
Well, we can certainly see that, can't we? The way we've been inundated with chemicals and everything else. We've talked about that for quite a bit on this show, actually, in terms of the dissemination of all the endocrine disruptors and BP, estrogen mimickers and everything else is a huge topic and a very important one, of course. But John, why don't we take a short break here between the segments? We're about 45 now. We can take a short break and then continue and pick up our conversation in the second here. But I know your websites are not up at the moment. We'll see if they are indeed up by the time we put the show up on the web, but nonetheless, people can listen. They will listen to it later in the archives and whatnot. So they'll still kind of try to find your domain names and whatnot. Tell us about the websites where people can go to read more about the stuff that we've been talking about here so far, and if you have anything else you'd like to mention as well there about the site.
Okay, yeah, well, it's at johnnugent.com, and I have an essay about there are our white Salutrian ancestors above the banner, which is a picture of me. There are my static web pages. These are the most important essays. I have a blog on an almost daily basis in English, French, and German, sometimes Spanish and Russian as well. Not Swedish, I'm sorry, Henrik.
No worries.
although I can read Swedish quite well because I'm fluent in German, and I actually did study the Scandinavian languages. And I also understand Afrikaans for that reason, because all the Germanic languages are
very similar. Oh, definitely. Exactly. I can hear. Yeah, I heard that in another documentary I watched. I was surprised how many words I recognized. Kind of there's a Dutch flavor to it. There's a Germanic flavor to it. And then even some Scandinavian resemblance as well. Very interesting.
Exactly. I hope soon to have johnnugent.com back up. It's the first time it's been down in 5 years, but the enemy seems to be very afraid of me and the idea that I would create a multiracial alliance, not just white people, but an alliance of everybody who wants to end the Zionist threat to all races, not just the white race. Yep. Once they've knocked off the white race, they're also opposed to the Chinese and to the blacks into the browns, yellows, and opposed to everybody. They want to enslave the whole planet. Right now, their main rival for power is the white race, so they're attacking us first. But once the whites are gone, they will enslave all the other races. So I think way back in May, I got a large donation in from Germany. I announced a black-white alliance, announced I was running for mayor of my town in Pennsylvania. The next day, all hell broke loose. We were ordered to leave our rented house. My credit card processing was canceled. And a huge new attacks on my character began at this moment. If you look on Google, of the first 14 entries under the name John DeNugent, 7 of the 14 are attacks on me, calling me both a homosexual, amazingly, which is incredible because I've been married twice. I've had 2 long-term relationships. I have 2 daughters, 2 granddaughters. I've had at least 25 girlfriends, I mean, that I've actually slept with. I mean, I'm a very heterosexual guy,
right?
But I'm called a homosexual, and yet I'm also called a wife beater. But the homosexuals don't have wives, so how is that
anything to defame the character, right? It doesn't really matter, so.
Yeah, and I'm called a coward. I'm called a con man. I'm called a psychopath, a dog torturer. This is, I'm cruel to dogs even. So, I mean, this John Nugent is really the most evil guy since Adolf Hitler, which is saying something. So, and I'm very honored to be so attacked. But in any case, I will just say this. Then we can go for our pause.
Sure.
One of the most famous pyramids of the Mayas down in the Guatemala, southern Mexico area is the Chichen Temple of the Warrior. And in the murals, this is one of these big pyramids at the top. They did human sacrifice.
Give us the name again. You were cutting out a little bit there. Give us the name again.
So it's called Chichen Itza.
Chichen Itza, yeah.
Yeah, C-H-I-C-H-E-N, Chichen, and then I-T-Z-A, the Temple of the Warrior in the Mayan language, Chichen Itza. And inside this pyramid, there are murals, very, very clear. And in one of the murals, these dark-skinned people are raiding a village on the coast of Guatemala, and everybody in the village has blonde hair. And this is in 700 AD. This is 800 years before Christopher Columbus. And the blonde people run, some of them naked, because I guess they were sleeping. You know, in hot country, people sleep naked sometimes, you know, Mexico, tropical areas. Some of them running out into the surf, but other Mayans are with war canoes are coming, and they're capturing them in the water, and they're being tied up with their hands behind their heads, but behind, you know, their hands bound behind them, and they're taken, and then in a later scene, they're cutting their hearts out. So these brown-skinned people are cutting the hearts out of people with long blonde hair. This is in southern Mexico, blonde people, 700 AD.
Interesting.
So it's clear that the Zoroastrians did not completely die out.
Yeah, I wonder if there's... we've talked about some of the other tribes as well, potentially making over from the Canary Islands, but you have the Chachapoyas and, you know, a couple of other ones as well that are, you know, rumored. You can even see some of the faces on the Olmec statues as well as being... kind of clearly Caucasian. There are certainly people of other races there too. But yeah, that's interesting. I haven't seen, we've talked quite a bit about, you know, Mayan civilization and the pyramids and all that, but I've actually never seen the mural. So I got to take a look at that picture here in the break so I can see some of that for myself. But that's very interesting, John.
great, super. Yeah, if you wanted to make a break now, Henrik, that'd be fine.
Definitely. Yeah, let's do that. Meantime here then, johndenugent.com. That's the website. I hope it's up by the time you guys are listening to this, otherwise check it out a little bit later. We have much more to discuss here. We'll continue talking more about the Zoroastrians and what John DeNugent sees in the big picture of what this means, and of course all the other issues that are connected with this. So a lot more coming up, folks. Stay with us, John. We'll be right back after this break. as we proceed to discuss the solutions in the second hour with John DeNugent. We also go further into the, metaphysical areas and hear more about his take on the extraterrestrial connection. This is, of course, something we've discussed many times before on the program, but this is from a new angle, however. John discusses the broadcast interruption through the Hannington transmitter in the United Kingdom back in 1977, what some people believe to be a message, a communication. We'll also discuss the Mandan tribe, the Waugas, the DNA finds within these tribes, and specifically in the maternal line, and what that tells us. We discuss excessive nobility and how the reality of the Salutrians changes race relations in America today, and how it also alters the discussion of who have first access rights to America, who it really belongs to, basically. This might be one of the major reasons why this area, why this subject has been so heavily covered up, because, of course, what it means in the long run and how this is being used against Americans today. We'll proceed at redicemembers.com. Sign up for a membership there, and we'll get to all the other aspects of this discussion and hear more about what John DeNugent has to say and his take on what this material brings to the table and what it means. We have more coming, of course. Tracy Twyman, Kim and Dave, James Swagger, Brett Vinott, Laird Scranton, and others. Next up, however, we have a Radio 314 with Greg Johnson. All right, folks, thank you for staying with us. We'll be right back. RedIceMembers.com. Go there, sign up, and tune in.